particular study that we're reviewing here is our phase two study. And what we wanted to do was to compare our groundwater level trends throughout 2010 and 11 with the closest rainfall station. It's not appropriate for this study to have a look at the wider rainfall stations. It certainly will be for our groundwater model, but for this particular study, we need to look at the closest available rainfall station.
But why only use records since 1976 when there have been rainfall records kept at other stations since 1888?
It's important to get the very best data for the study that we're doing at the present time. And the data that we're collecting is baseline information, and it's only available from 2010. So there's no point going backwards in time to 1976 even, or way back to the 1890s. That will be incredibly important for the model. But for this report, where we're just looking at trends, you know, what responses do we get for rainfall, what responses do we get for dry period, it's really important to have the closest rainfall station because Gloucester area is subject to a lot of storm events.
Mm.
And what you get in a local area is really important compared to something that might be 20 or 50 kilometres away.
But if you look at 120 years worth of rainfall records, it becomes obvious that the period from 1976 onwards doesn't give a proper measure of the variability.
Yes, you're right there. We've been through wetter periods from 76. There's been a dry period in there, and certainly going back in time, there's a lot of variability as well. And we're going to be taking all that into account as part of our groundwater model. And we'll certainly be looking at all those rainfall records. And in fact, Dr. Pells is probably jumping ahead a little bit in terms of the work program that we've got in mind. But I have no problem with what he's saying there about the rainfall stations. We certainly do intend to take up that information for the next phase of the program, which is the groundwater model.
Okay, can you explain for us what that next phase will entail?
Okay, what we need to do is build what they call a groundwater flow model using a computer. We collect all the fundamental information about our groundwater systems, what layers we need to represent, you know, the coal layers, the alluvial layers, the water-bearing zones, the confining layers. We need to build those into the model with different permeabilities, and then we need to replicate the groundwater levels that we see today. If we can build a computer representation of what we're seeing in our water level monitoring network, we know we've got a very good model that we can then use for predictive purposes. And the intention then is to actually put 110 wells in our stage one area, put that into the model and see what the depressurization effects are on the coal seams and what, if any, effect we'll have on the shallow aquifer systems.
So I wanted to ask you about the area that was used in this Phase 2 Parsons Brinkerhoff report. The concern from Professor Pell is about the area that's been used. Now, he says investigations have been done within the Stage 1 section, which is only 4% of the total area and only 7% of Stage 1. And he says that's less than 0.25% of the total area of the project. Now, the community, he says, is concerned about the total project, and he says that any statistician will tell you that that's just not a valid sample.
Well, he's actually got his percentages wrong because he's taken the area of the whole of the petroleum exploration lease area, which is not the area of the Gloucester Basin. Our Stage 1 area is actually about 25% of the Gloucester Basin, so it's a good representative sample of all the geology across that area. And then what we've done within the Stage 1 area is looked at the central, the southern, the northern and the western extremities of that area by putting in dedicated groundwater monitoring wells. And within that area, we are able to share information that Gloucester Resources and Gloucester Coal have also collected over the last 12 or 18 months. So we'll end up having a very good spatial coverage across the whole of that Stage 1 area. And the intention is to get the very best data and the very best understanding of that area so we can then apply it to the broader area of the Gloucester Basin.
So if you challenge his percentages, what are the correct percentages of the total area that was surveyed?
Okay, as I say, the Stage 1 area is about 25 to 30% of the Gloucester Basin area.
Mm. And that's where potentially up to 110 coal seam gas drills could be placed?
The whole basin is our concept plan area, which is up to 300 wells.
Mm.
But our Stage 1 area is the first 110.
Okay, so that's 25% of the Gloucester Basin. And of that 25%, how much was used in this Parsons Brinkerhoff report?
Well, we looked at 100% of the area. You know, if you add up the size of the drill pads and that we drilled on, yes, it's a very small percentage, but spatially we've looked at the northern, the southern, the western and the central areas in quite a deal of group detail. And that is sufficient coverage when you add in all the information that we're able to get from the coal mines to provide a very good understanding about different groundwater flow systems within that area.
Another issue that Professor Pells raises is in that the way that the monitoring of the river flows have been recorded, and he says that the report relies on only 10 months of those river flows, and that it's impossible to make climactic deductions from this limited amount of data. Now, he does recognise that it's very good data, but he says you need to be careful about making generalisations when it's such a small sample size.
Yeah. Well, in my experience, and I've had 35 years in putting together groundwater monitoring networks and surface water monitoring networks, if you get some very good quality data at particular sites, you only need to have wet periods and some dry periods within it, and then you can synthesise the hydrograph for time periods going back in time using the rainfall record. And that's a very legitimate part of the computer modelling, the predictive modelling that the next phase they're about to jump into.
So you're saying that there'll be more comprehensive investigations in this next phase that AGL will be undertaking?
Oh, absolutely. It doesn't stop with this report. This report that we've got out there for independent peer review and public release at the present time, if you like, it's the building blocks. These are the fundamental building blocks for the groundwater model. It's the data and it's the spatial coverage that we need to go forward. But the sort of things that we're going forward with are a groundwater model. We're doing additional fault studies, of which the drilling program or Kyvery is one. We're doing property surveys, and we'll be doing additional drilling in other areas outside our Stage 1 area. All those are being timetabled over the next 12 or 18 months.
John, there are significant concerns about the amount of salt water that is potentially going to be produced once the wells start production. Now, he says that water from the test bore sites produced 50 million litres of produced water that was stored on site, and he says that's approximately 150 to 200 tonnes of salt.
Yep.
That's a lot of salt water. If there are 110 producing bores, say perhaps 330 producing bores, how much salt water will those bores produce, and how will AGL manage that salt water?
Yeah, you've got to realise that the Avon River catchment is a quite salty catchment. It's naturally salty because of the rocks in the landscape there. The 50 million litres that we've got in storage there was part of our flow testing programs over the last few years, and yes, it's about 150 tonnes of salt in it. But you've got to put that in context with what's happening in the landscape. I just did a quick calculation the other day on the volume of salt that's being exported out of one of the local rivers there. Unfortunately, I haven't got the Avon, but for the Gloucester River, it looks as though there's about 20,000 tonnes of salt per annum that is naturally exported through the Manning River catchment each year, and that's just natural runoff off the catchment.
Mm.
So 150 tonnes, when you compare it to 20,000 coming out of one stream, and that's not taking into account the Avon and Barrington and all the other tributaries, is a very, very small quantity.
It is a small quantity, but if these wells start producing between 110 to 330, they're going to be producing approximately, well, if there's 110, that'll be between 1,000 and 9,000 tonnes of salt per year. Now, that's a huge burden on a natural river system. How will AGL manage the salt water?
Okay, well, what we've got planned for the produced water, and it's the subject of further studies as well, is we've got irrigation plans in place. We're looking at salt-tolerant cropping and using water to blend that or reverse osmosis to desalinate it and bring it down to a salt level, which would be suitable for irrigation in that particular landscape. We're going to be using deficit irrigation, so none of that salt and none of that salt water should run off into the streams. It's all going to be contained within the landscape, contained within the soil profile.
So there won't be trucks driving huge amounts of salt along the back roads in Gloucester?
No, definitely not. We are very much angling for a sustainable local solution. We're not about exporting trucks or ripping up the roads or having things like that, to the detriment of the wider community.
Is it really feasible, though, to deal with that amount of salt and not have to get rid of it in some way, not have to get it out of the community?
I think it is feasible. We're undertaking a trial irrigation plot this year, which will be looking at irrigating up to 90 or 100 megalitres of blended water, which will be the first part of that 50 megalitres that we've got in storage. We think we can make that work quite effectively by growing salt-tolerant crops like forage sorghum and lucerne, which are very salt-tolerant. But you know, that's why we want to go out there and do the trials in the landscape to see what can work and just what water uptake and salt uptake rates we can get with those particular crops.
There's concern that this Phase 2 Parsons Brinckerhoff report doesn't actually take into account what could happen once those wells start producing. And Professor Pells said that there needs to be more studies to factor in the unique nature of the Gloucester Basin geology. What could happen once the wells start producing? I mean, what could happen in relation to the bores, the depth of bores, the directional drilling and the effect of hydraulic fracturing?
Yeah, well, I guess this is part and parcel of the computer modelling that we were talking about earlier. We can do some predictions based on the very good data that we've collected out of our Phase 1 area and do some predictions on what might happen within the coal seams and then the shallow aquifer systems. We think there's going to be enough confining layers in the system there to isolate the upper zones from the lower zones. That's what our natural studies are telling us. But
you don't know, do you?
Well, we can only collect the very best information that we've got in this pre-development phase, and we need to go out and do the drilling program at Walk Ivory. This is the one that was blockaded before Christmas. That particular study is going to be really important to us to understand what happens when we get gas wells in a production mode so we can monitor what happens with our shallow and deep groundwater systems. Unless we do that work, we're not going to be in a position to move forward with the computer modelling with any greater degree of confidence.
Gloucester's now been included on the bioregional priority list for research by the Independent Expert Scientific Committee. So I wonder, what does that mean for AGL and its coal seam gas project in Gloucester?
Yeah, I haven't seen that listing myself, and I'm not quite sure what it means for our project going forward. We're more than happy to share all the information that we've collected. We think we've got a very good network, we've got a very good data set, and we're more than happy to share that with the federal researchers that are looking at different coal seam developments across Australia.